I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Kevin Jones. Kevin is the regional president of Huntington Bank, and Huntington is a leader in small business lending. Maybe you can talk about why Huntington focuses on entrepreneurial types of companies and why that's so important to the bank.
We have historically believed that small businesses are important for the primary reason that it is the primary driver of the economy. Any economic statistic that you see indicates the level of importance in small business, not only as an employer, but also as an innovator.
Well, Kevin, if you're a small business out there, what are some tips you would give a small business owner?
The primary thing is to have a plan, and getting that information and getting that advice from your accountant so that as you begin your plan, you can then take that to your other financial resources and partners and advisors to hone that in and then get an understanding of how you're going to accomplish that is really important. We would advise any small business owner to start with the plan and keep the plan alive and then adjust the plan year by year.
Always a lot easier for a business owner to work with the banker and let the bank take some ownership and really some input into the plans instead of saying, hey, by the way, you know, I'm making this acquisition, I need to fund this much money, allowing the banker into the conversation early on so the banker can also be part of the team.
In many cases, we have been brought in late, and we can sometimes be a wrench in that process if we're not brought in earlier. We will obviously help advise, we get an understanding of what you're trying to accomplish so that we can go back, do our homework, and work through to meet your needs. And if we can't meet the needs, how do we help restructure the process so that we can fulfill the need? In the world of small business lending, there are so many opportunities to engage other potential partners, as an example, the SBA. Now, that process is very important, and the SBA is also very important in terms of their influence. But because of that, we do need to be ahead so that we can understand how we fit that need and how it potentially could take advantage of other alternatives.
A lot of people, though, have perceived, and I think very erroneously, that the SBA loan is a loan of last resort. It is not the loan of last resort. It's a very good lending alternative.
That's absolutely right. By no means is it the loan of last resort. We underwrite SBA loans for repayment by the company, not by the SBA. The SBA is there to provide assistance to help terms and conditions potentially for the business owner so that as they are growing, they're experiencing a need change, the SBA can be there to help them facilitate that beyond the traditional financing that banks have historically been chartered with doing.
In today's environment, Kevin, you know, interest rates are very low, which is great from the business, maybe not so great for the banks, but it's important to try to use facilities, I would think, for a business to lock in those interest rates as long as they can.
Absolutely. Today is a great time to be looking at your long-term plans. There we go. We get back to the term plan again. Mm-hmm. What are you planning to do, not over the next 2 to 3 years, but really the next 3 to 5 years? Because we are at historically low interest rates, and despite some recent uptick, they're still incredibly low, and there are opportunities to take advantage of market conditions to really solidify one's business for 5 years from now, not just 2 years from now. Foundationally, the bank has been very focused on having resources that meet our clients' needs. And small business lending is one of them where we have adequate resources, substantial resources. So if you have an account with Huntington, talk to your local banker. Obviously, you can place a phone call into me if you'd like, and I can put you in touch with the appropriate resource. 762-1854.
That's
area code 513.
Yes. 762-1854.
Yes.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Kevin Jones. Kevin is the regional president of the Southern Ohio, Kentucky region for Huntington Bank. And Kevin, one of the things that we sometimes hear from clients or rather business associates when it comes to their financing needs is they're surprised that a bank won't loan them as much money as they think they need for their business. And sometimes it seems it may be because they're just undercapitalized. Is it the viewpoint of the bank that they should be providing capital to their customers, or does the customer have to come up with some of its own capital and you're more of a supplement or helping them with their working capital?
It's important that a client, when they come in and ask a bank to help the bank support their business, that they do have solidified their equity capital base, because a bank's historic charter has been to provide short-term working capital, such as revolving lines of credit, intermediate-term capital for very traditional needs, such as equipment finance, perhaps an investment in real estate for the operations of the particular business, and maybe some other term capital needs that are focused on the short-term operations of the business. But in many cases, we work with people who are undercapitalized, and it's tough to ask a bank to help them capitalize from that perspective.
Do you still get people who push back, Kevin, on personal guarantees?
We do, and you know, there are situations where banks do relinquish personal guarantees, and you know, there are important steps to get to that point. Much of that has to do with business maturity, adequate levels of capital and support already existing within the business, and then the other factors, quite frankly, the profitability of the company and the company's willingness to keep those profits within the business. Those are very important factors as it relates to personal guarantees.
One of the most important things that you can do when you're looking to get a bank loan is to show the bank how they're going to be repaid. And so as they put their cash flow projections out there, how will you, Mr. Business Owner, use these bank funds to not only grow your business, increase your profitability, but repay the bank?
I personally take it down to the simplest forms of banking. We've obviously purchased cars individually. We've purchased homes individually. And the first thing a bank does is show you the repayment schedule. It's important that we have an understanding how our capital commitment is repaid. We not only represent our shareholders, but we also represent our depositors who entrust us with their capital, ask us to provide a service to the community by lending it out and facilitating business growth. But the important piece is to be repaid.
You want to make sure that when you do approach the bank that you have all your I's dotted and your T's crossed. You're only going to have a chance to make a good first impression. And if the information that you give to the banker is not correct, you've got a problem.
You know, there are a couple of ways to do that. Obviously, talk to your accounting professional, any other business advisory professional. If you are still trying to get something off the ground, please talk to your banker. Your banker can help advise that process as well. If you don't know what you need, ask the banker. I'm looking to plan this expansion, or I'm looking to plan this investment in my business. What do I need to provide to you? Who can I get information from to help that process? That's a very important first step, quite frankly.
Do you feel like businesses are willing to step out of the comfort zone and go out and borrow money to make investments in their companies? Are you seeing growth?
Today, we see a lot of cautiousness. We have lines of credit that are in place with many of our clients that are not heavily used. So I do see prudent businesses today really evaluating and making very cautious steps as they consider those investments. That's not to say that they don't have an appetite. They do have an appetite, I think, as you probably know. But I think they're being very cautious because of the macroeconomic environment today.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, they say that the American dream is owning your own business. And we wrote an article in the Cincinnati Inquirer recently talking about one of the biggest mistakes that people that do start their own businesses make that can be devastating.
Right. You don't want to turn that dream into a nightmare. And usually the nightmare occurs when you run out of cash if you start a business. Not an infrequent problem for a new business.
In a small business, cash flow is the lifeblood of the business. And what we've learned is that when cash is gone, so is the business. People estimate their cash requirements when they start a business. They go through detailed projections, or at least they should, estimates, cash flow estimates. But the problem is that those cash flow estimates are just that. They're not real. They're actually just estimates.
Chances are the expenses are going to be more than you projected, and it's going to take longer to reach the revenue.
When you're in the trenches, everything just takes longer than the planning stages. So what we recommend is that do a very detailed, thorough analysis, project your cash requirements, and then double it.
And maybe that's obviously not an exact formula, but the idea is that you're not going to be able to come up with the exact amount you need. So make sure you have a cushion so that you won't have to close what could be a successful business just because you run out of cash. Make sure you have access to capital and even access to additional capital if you're going to need it.
Business owners really need to take a look at the pitfalls. I know it's very exciting. Most entrepreneurs are very optimistic about their business, or they wouldn't be starting one. But the key is you also have to look at the pitfalls, the possible breakdowns, so that you can plan for those before they even occur.
Not every sale is a good sale. Make sure that you're going to get paid for whatever you're selling. Maybe you need to take credit cards, even though there's fees involved with those, just to enhance your cash flow. You need to think about everything very carefully to make sure that your revenue is sufficient to match your expenses as quickly as possible.
We live in a world out there where it's very easy to come up with new ideas, have new services. Small companies can play on the same playing field oftentimes with bigger companies because of the internet. You need to anticipate what happens if someone comes out making your product or service obsolete. Think about vendor problems you might have, staffing problems you might have, so that you can plan around those and build a safety net into your financial projections so that you can accommodate any unforeseen circumstances. Again, I don't think we can say this enough. When you run out of cash, no matter how great your business is going to fail.
Well, and some of that has to do with how you start your business. Maybe you've come from a big company or another successful company, and you want to emulate everything they did. But maybe you don't need fancy, expensive office space or fancy, expensive furniture, depending on your business. You know, maybe you can have very sparse surroundings, and you meet with your customers at their place of business.
And unfortunately, when you first start out, you may not be able to afford top-level, high-paid executives. So think about outsourcing some of those needs. For example, a CFO. You may need someone with great financial experience, but you know you can actually acquire those services from an independent contractor many times.
Develop a personal budget, because one of the cash drains from a business can be the cash that you need to provide for your living expenses. So make sure that your own living expenses during the startup phase are as modest as possible.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today I want to talk about something that we don't talk about very often, and that's mistakes. Mistakes maybe that are pretty common for entrepreneurs, especially new entrepreneurs, startup-type businesses tend to make.
And not just startups. We see oftentimes people who've been in business for a while, they just dream big. That's part of the nature of being an entrepreneur. But sometimes eyes are bigger than wallets. So you have to be careful that if you do dream, which is a good thing, to make sure that you can back it up financially.
Yeah, and one mistake I think people make sometimes is going with their gut. And you have to validate what your instincts are and make sure that it makes sense before you commit a lot of resources to a particular idea.
There's a difference between having an idea, actually doing some research, backing up the plan, going out and making sure that you've tested it, than just going with it. And I'm not suggesting that you wait too long. I think also sometimes people tend to overanalyze, wait, and not act when they're really just making an excuse for not moving forward and taking action. So there is a fine line between validating your idea, validating the business concept, than just not taking action because you're afraid of failure.
Another mistake is being afraid to make mistakes, because you can make a mistake and learn from that mistake and change course. The key is don't commit so many resources so that when you do make that mistake, which everyone makes, you won't damage yourself irrevocably. And you know, one of the new keywords, it's not a new word, but a kind of a buzzword that I hear in a different context these days, is pivot.
Yes, I learned that word when I was taking dance, pivot. But now it's being used in a completely different context as it relates to business owners.
Really, I think what pivot means is you have a business plan, you go down a certain path, and then you need to learn to adjust so that whatever's not working for you, you can adjust accordingly.
You don't want to have so much determination that this particular plan is going to work in this particular way that you just keep throwing resources at it when it's not going to succeed. You have to set measurable markers, measurable indicators, so that you can determine if you're on the right track. And if not, then you can take action to pivot. That doesn't mean it's a failure. That means you have to make an adjustment.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a business that ended up doing exactly what they thought they would be doing on day one of their startup.
No, but we have seen people who have allowed an unsuccessful project, an unsuccessful service to go on and on, where they just kept throwing money at it, thinking that if they just put a few more resources that it would turn around. And sadly, oftentimes it just doesn't work out that way.
Another mistake people make is getting too much advice. I mean, we always tell people to seek advice, to have mentors, but you have to have the right amount and have people that are all moving kind of in the same direction. Otherwise, you'll get conflicting advice and not be able to do anything.
Take a hard look at your skill set, what you're good at, and then find people that can complement those areas where you may not be as strong. Don't be afraid to go out there and get advisors, but like you said, Tom, you have to have confidence in the advisors that you do have. Don't keep vetting the same issue out with 10 different people. Choose a few people that you trust, you respect, and take advice, mix it up in your head with everything else you know, and then move forward and make a decision.
You know, another area I think that entrepreneurs sometimes lack is marketing and even sales. Most products don't market themselves. They have to be marketed.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Pat Longo. Pat is the director of the Hamilton County Business Center, and the Business Center has done incredible things and produced great results for our region in terms of helping businesses grow jobs right here in our own community.
We have 120 successful ventures out in Southwest Ohio. We've also had a number of companies that have grown up through our system that have been acquired. Actually, we're real excited because one of our companies, May Consulting, recently was purchased by Max Technical Training. You know, so it's a Cincinnati company acquiring a Cincinnati company. Our little company started as one, ended up having four jobs. Now they're part of a larger operation.
You have another success story, don't you? One that actually went all the way to the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, we're real excited. Dr. Tom Reed joined us in the early 2000s, about 2004, after spending about 3.5-4 years with us, was lured away with some venture capital dollars to the state of Maryland. And that company, when they were with us, was called Genomatics, and they did DNA mining tools. They helped get into those little microscopic areas. And all of a sudden, get some dollars out of Maryland. Last month, went public as a company called Intrexon and had a little market cap of about $2.2 billion. It was very exciting. And it started here. It's a UC professor or a UC educated individual who put forth an entrepreneurial effort, worked with the Hamilton County Business Center, and now he's on top of the world.
Well, that's a great example for other startups to look forward to, because that's everyone's dream, right? To build a great success.
When they make their pitches, they're like, well, we're going to grow this company and we're going to either be acquired or we're going to go public. Well, this is the first one in our history that I'm aware of that has ever gone public.
Well, and I think that says a lot about the Hamilton County Business Center and the foundation that this organization was able to create right here in our own community.
It's working with each individual entrepreneur on a solo basis, working with them, coaching with them, getting them mentors. If you look at a Dr. Tom Reed for Genomatics / Intrexon, you know, we spent a lot of time kind of building the model, what it's going to look like, and then trying to get some of the tools to get used.
Many times entrepreneurs have a great idea, they're very smart, they have great talent maybe in one specific area, but what organizations like the Hamilton County Business Center can do is surround these entrepreneurs with resources that maybe they don't have as great of, certainly money being one of them.
Probably the first thing is believing in the entrepreneur, having someone that they can turn to that, you know, when they're having a bad day, we can pick them up. When they're having a good day, we help them refocus. They lose focus along the way. A lot of our entrepreneurs, you know, they win a contract and they start focusing on executing that contract. That's fantastic, but we're saying, how much of your day are you carving out to get your next deal? If you want to have a good exit strategy, if you want to sell your business, you better have revenue, because nobody wants to buy just an idea. They want to buy revenue. You know, we're one of those organizations that works on the bootstrapping side, but we also work on the access to capital side, and that's one of the strong suits of being an incubator.
So if someone listening today has a startup business, a small early stage business, how would they know if they would be eligible or it would be a right move for them to consider the Hamilton County Business Center?
Well, I think there's two things. One, you can check out our website, and that's www.hcdc.com, or give us a phone call, you know, and make contact or get in touch with us. We'd prefer to have the conversation because we want you to talk to a person who's been through the battles and can evaluate the situation and give you some pointers, because not every idea the first time that it comes to the table is the right idea. But if we work on it, it can become the right idea.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Pat Longo. Pat is the director of the Hamilton County Business Center. And Pat, I know you're soon to be celebrating your 25th anniversary at the Business Center. And at that time, I think you all were pioneers in terms of business development assisting entrepreneurs. But now there's lots of other entities that occupy some of that space. And I think it's a little confusing sometimes to see how they all fit with each other. There's Hamilton County Business Center, Hamilton County Development Company, there's CincyTech, there's Centrifuge. Do you all work with each other?
We have to work together because there are, you know, because there's more entrepreneurs in our community, there's more needs for assistance. We're in business incubation, so we're a place. We're coaching, we're mentoring. A place like CincyTech is really trying to be that funding source and be kind of that management assistance tool, a executive in residence or an entrepreneur in residence. Those people are very important. Those are people that we get to leverage for our clients at the incubator. You got folks like the Brandery, that's an accelerator. They're a wonderful national attraction tool for us as economic development people. I think that's the one thing people need to realize is we're all in this space of economic development. We're trying to make Cincinnati, greater Cincinnati, competitive. And by being competitive, that means attracting talent, growing our ideas, having capital here, and trying to make these things grow here. If there's ever a sense that we're not working together, then we're not doing the right things. But I think the sense is we are working together, and we're still trying to figure those things out. And I think one of the big things is Centrifuge.
Maybe you can share what Centrifuge is all about.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic because look who they bring to the table. They bring a Procter & Gamble that hasn't been overly active in the entrepreneur space, a Kroger, a Macy's, a University of Cincinnati, a Children's Hospital. These are great organizations that are saying, you know what, this is happening when we're traveling around the world, and what is this? It's entrepreneurship. Let's make it more vibrant in Cincinnati. I think people are saying, hey, we're just coming into our own. We've been an entrepreneurial community. We just haven't tooted our own horn. We got more people talking about it now, and I think that's what's exciting.
You know, we've had many, many companies in this org, in this community who have done quite well. So why do we have this focus, this energy and excitement around entrepreneurs, startups?
I think the internet has become a great equalizer. I also think that this thing that we just came out of, this great recession, there weren't a lot of jobs. There weren't a lot of jobs created there. So a lot of the big companies that we wanted to rely on, the Fifth Thirds and the Proctors and, you know, the big insurance agencies, they weren't hiring. So people had to go out on their own, they're creative. And it's the people with this energy. And who are those folks? There are a lot of them are entrepreneurs.
Maybe you can talk about the survival rate or the companies that actually do go on to be successful who do take advantage of the support.
We're a support mechanism. You know, we don't create jobs. We don't create companies. Entrepreneurs create companies. So that's what we need to work on. I mean, the national average is between 10 and 15% of all startups will see their fifth anniversary.
That's incredible. You know,
what we want to do is see, we want to double, triple, quadruple that rate. Hamilton County Business Center and its existence, we're batting about 60%. So we're about 5 to 6 times the national average. And we think that really comes down to the mentoring and the coaching and the programming and being around others where you can learn from each other.
And if people listening today would like to learn more about it, what is your website?
Yeah, feel free to visit us at www.hcdc.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Carter Randolph and Carl Sampson. Carter is the president, founding member, and trustee of Green Acres Foundation, and Carl is one of the members of the Green Acres Artists Guild. Carter, maybe we can briefly explain what Green Acres is.
Green Acres is a foundation established by Lewis and Louise Nippert to reflect their interests and to make a gift to the community. So they set aside today, it amounts to 600 acres of ground, which provides environment education and sustainable ag education, which were Mr. Nippert's loves, and then arts education, which was Mrs. Nippert's love. And of course, today we're here because of the Green Acres Artists Guild, which has a show going on at Green Acres right now.
Well, what makes Green Acres different from other outdoor education sites around the area?
Well, it's located 20 minutes from town, and the Nipperts provided an endowment, so all of the school children that come, there's no charge for those classes. And the other aspects that's unique is Green Acres does not have canned programming. Everything is individually tailored to the needs of the classroom teacher when they come in. So we do everything in a very high-quality manner and directed toward the ultimate beneficiary, which are the children of the greater Cincinnati area.
For a lot of these children, it gets them a chance to see something they may never have seen in their urban environment.
Absolutely. We've had children in from the inner city schools, particularly the Euler School, and some of these children think that the ground should be hard like blacktop because that's what they're used to. Quiet is actually noisy with the roar of engines, sirens, and pops, loud noises. And odor and fresh air is actually dirty air to them because it doesn't have the fume smell. So when they get the exposure to Green Acres, they see something that they've never seen before in their life.
Right now, you're hosting your inaugural art show for the Green Acres Artists Guild. Can you give us a little background on that?
A couple of years ago, the Guild was formed when we were celebrating Mrs. Nippert's 100th birthday party. And so we put together an art show of 100 years of art from Cincinnati artists. And as part of that outreach, we found many artists in the Cincinnati area, living artists like Carl here, who are artists in the classic style, but their work and their ability to paint is stuff that you would see in a museum. It's museum quality, and it's kind of hidden in the community to some extent, because Cincinnati, I don't think, has really grasped the classical artists that are living here today. So we had the opportunity in putting on that show to learn about these artists and begin working with them so they would keep art on the walls of the Art Center at Green Acres. And this is the first time we've really dedicated a show to them so that the Cincinnati community can get a feel that Cincinnati artists are as good as any place else. And this group is as good as what you would find with the symphony in the music world or the opera in the opera world. This is our classical artists, and they're as good and world-class as those organizations.
If viewers listening today want more information about the art show or Green Acres, what's the contact information?
It's green-acres.org is the website, or the phone number is 891-4227, and it's 513, of course.
Well, thanks for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Carter Randolph. Carter is the president, founding member, and trustee of the Green Acres Foundation. And also joining us is Carl Sampson, who is one of the members of the Green Acres Artists Guild. Today we're talking about the Green Acres inaugural art show. And Carl, maybe I'll start with you. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the pieces that you've done that are going to be featured in the art show.
Well, I'm primarily a portrait painter nowadays, but I've certainly done my share of landscapes and figurative works. And there's a few of my wife in the Wessel House, which we own, which was a famous artist home and studio that belonged to Frank Duveneck's two favorite students. So I've got some work that plays off of that. But really, the I think the distinguishing feature of the group is that it has a kind of reverence for nature that is very much built on that great tradition of Cincinnati's golden age. And it dovetails very nicely with the kinds of programs that Green Acres have for children, and that they're taught to sort of look at nature with through different eyes based on the paintings that are on display, which really is a group of paintings that are very poetic and beautiful to look at and timeless in their appeal to people.
Well, the art show is there to view beautiful art, but this art is also for sale?
It is indeed, yeah. In fact, they've had quite a few sales already. I think just as the Golden Age painters were very collectible, this new tier of very exciting painters will be as well.
Well, and Carter, if someone does purchase art at the art show, a portion of the proceeds go to benefit Green Acres Foundation?
Yes, 30% of the proceeds go to the Green Acres Bus Fund, which our programming for school children is all free, but schools lack the funding to pay for the buses. So they can come to our programs if we can get them there, and we do fundraising for the bus transportation program.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about why Green Acres is so important to Cincinnati.
I think the easiest description is the impact that it has on children. About 3-4 years ago, we formed a partnership with the Euler School, which is a inner city school with very disadvantaged children. And in that 3 or 4 year horizon, we've been able to give those children exposure to the environment, to sustainable agriculture, and to the arts through our Arts Center. And in that time frame, Euler went from academic emergency all the way to continuous improvement, which is 2 jumps in the state standards for testing. And recently, Euler's been the subject of national radio programs and also national attention because it's done so well by these children who are really challenged. But when they get an opportunity to get out of the classroom and have a hands-on experience that's tailored to the lesson that this classroom teacher says they need help in, it does enhance their ability to think outside the box, their ability to innovate, and their ability to get a better test score. And one of the side effects that I learned from the Euler principal was when disciplinary matters came up, he could tell them they couldn't go to extracurriculars, they couldn't go to other things, and they had to stay in study halls, and that would get a little bit. But when he said, you can't go to Green Acres, they'd cry and beg. So it's a good experience for them.
You not only have children from Oilers going, but you have lots of children. How many, on average, do you get in a typical year?
Right now, we get about 17,000 children, and we're currently building out our infrastructure that by 2020, we should be able to take 70,000 children a year.
Carter, if people want more information about Green Acres Foundation or about the art show, what's the contact information?
Our website is www.green-acres.org, and the phone number is 513-891-4227.
For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Brad Ostendorf and Kyle McGrath. And these entrepreneurs have recently started a new business called Herb Tank. And you're really kind of inventing a business almost, it seems to me like. Tell us a little bit about what Herb Tank does.
Well, Herb Tank is an aquaponics company. And for those of you that don't know what aquaponics is, it's actually an ancient technique of farming where...
Yeah. It's a sustainable form of farming. It's actually a mixture of two different styles of growing, one being aquaculture, which would be raising and breeding and farming fish, you know, to eat or to stock ponds. And the other would be hydroponics, so growing plants in water.
And the fish produce nutrients,
yeah,
that makes the water,
yeah,
better to grow the plant.
It's really simple. It's funny how we describe it to people and then it just kind of clicks. You know, we're learning it as we go. It's not something that we're trained to do, but it's...
Yeah, you guys are architectural majors, right? Recent
right,
grads
right,
from University
right,
of Kentucky, but right, your home is here in Northern Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I love the name Herb Tank. I mean, for those of you who don't know this company, it's actually the way they spelled it is U-R-B-T-A-N-C or mm-hmm, T-A-N-K. Herb like plant, but herb like urban.
Exactly.
Because you are developing these agricultural products and mm-hmm, the fish in an urban environment right down and over the Rhine.
Nailed
in
it.
A well warehouse.
Right, right. And Herb Tank is also a play on words, sort of. There's a lot of think tanks out there that are tech startups and things of that nature, but we chose that because we want to start this sort of farming incubator in the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, us not necessarily be the incubator itself, but be a part of this more complex network and just give that knowledge base to young entrepreneurs in the industry.
Don't you think there's a lot of emphasis these days on healthy, nutrient-rich, but non-GMO. Exactly. Where it's much more organic type of mm-hmm, food and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Why all of a sudden do you think as a society we've become much more conscientious about that?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's definitely happening. People are just becoming more aware of what goes into their food. And when you start to think about what you're picking off the shelf at the grocery store, you know, where did that really come from and how can it last that long?
Are you finding restaurants wanting and demanding because their customers want and demand locally grown produce?
Yeah, definitely. The best chefs in the area only source, well, most of their sourcing comes from local farms, you know. Not all of their menu, per se, can come from local farms, but the best ones try their hardest to source as much as mm-hmm, they can from local farms, because the less it travels, the better it tastes.
How are you approaching others to actually take advantage of this, come and leverage some of the early work you guys are doing?
It all comes down to sort of like sustainability. There are aquaponics companies throughout the country that are trying to think about who they can collaborate with. Food Chain in Lexington has been a great help to us. Becca Self down there has really given us a lot of advice. They're actually in the same building as a new craft brewery. So they're actually discussing and researching the way to take those brewer's spent grains, which still have a lot of nutrients in the end after they go through that brewing process, bring them back over through the door mm-hmm, to the aquaponics system and try and feed their fish with it.
And the last question I'd like to ask you guys, being young professionals down in the Over the Rhine, is the dynamic, the energy, do you really feel like things are happening down there in terms of growing jobs, growing businesses?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's apparent just walking the streets, and I think that's why we locate ourselves in that situation. You know, you mm-hmm, can walk down, have a drink with another person that's thinking, you know, mm-hmm, in your age group, thinking the same way, you know, really wanting to make an impact in the area. And there's just sort of buzz and vibe to it.
And people can find you on Facebook.
That's correct.
Herb Tank, U-R-B-T-A-N-K, Herb Tank. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Brad Ostendorf and Kyle McGrath. And these two gentlemen are the founders of a company called Herb Tank. And you guys live in the Over the Rhine area. Your business is located in Over the Rhine mm-hmm, in a six-story warehouse where you are growing agriculture, you're growing plants, aren't you? Yeah. But these are legal plants, correct?
Right, yeah.
You guys are architecture majors, but you did a real 360-degree turn to start Herb Tank. Maybe you can share what Herb Tank is and how you got involved.
Herb Tank, just a small company that we're starting. Since doing the architecture, graduated, got in kind of the food industry in over the Rhine. And we really liked that urban context, and that's we kind of took that from architecture. So we knew over the Rhine was a pretty special place. So Herb Tank is a way for us to kind of connect the dots. So it's an urban place that is making a comeback thanks to some of the restaurants down there. It's coming to Cincy. So we're kind of bridging that gap.
Basically, Herb Tank came from an idea that was brought out from our architecture schooling. Every year, I guess your last project for your studio, Capstone, you could say, is like a comprehensive studio, you know, that touches on urban planning aspects as well as other design aspects. Our studio is called River City Studio. So basically the River City Studio addresses cities along the Ohio River, the riverfront, primarily in Kentucky. So the year before us was, I believe it was Paducah, Kentucky, Henderson, Kentucky. And ours was, you know, the five cities of northern Kentucky. So Bellevue, Covington, Ludlow, Bromley, Dayton.
Well, this is great. You guys went to University of Kentucky down in Lexington. You were friends down there. You just recently graduated. I mean, you're 23 years old?
That's right, I think.
And so to actually step out, take on a business, a brand new business. This isn't like, you know.
You're creating a business,
you're
really.
You're creating a brand new industry almost, it seems like.
Right.
How's the response been so far?
Definitely mixed, but very accepting. I believe the whole notion of people coming more aware of where their food's coming from, they're seeing a lot of young people take that task on. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, younger kids are moving to urban environments. Mm-hmm. So most of the knowledge base is there, and feel like we're just answering that call, answering our interest.
Well, who's your client of your business? Is it the local restaurants?
It is. We have a couple people, just several right now that we provide to. One is Ryan Santos at Please. He started out doing pop-up dinners. So he would go to someone's house or a warehouse and do a dinner for a dozen or so people. And this past summer, he was doing dinners at Carriage House. And another restaurant that we're supplying stuff to soon is Nuvo and Green Up. So yeah, those are our two customers for right now.
What have you learned so far in terms of what your advice might be?
I think the biggest thing we've learned is just talk about what you want to do, kind of get the idea out there. The response that we've gotten has been absolutely incredible and kind of surprising for what we're doing. If you can get out there, you discover that things start to fall in place pretty quickly. For older, I'm not so sure, but at least for younger, I know it's helpful for us to be in a time period of our lives where this is, you know, a little bit easier to take on. We have some time to do our thing. So this is kind of the time, I think, for us to try something out.
And if anyone listening today would like to get more information about how they can take advantage of what you're growing, some of the plants, the very fresh local growth in their own restaurants for their own companies, how can they find this information out and reach you?
We have a Facebook, facebook.com/herbtank, and we also have email contact.
And what is it?
You can find that, yeah.
Yeah, mine is... My email is kyle@urbtank.com.
And mine is brad@urbtank.com.
Well, thank you guys and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Business-wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.